And it's time for another episode of the Hillbillies in the Holler podcast with your hosts, Boo Boo, Biggins, Buford, and goodness knows who else. Y'all pull up a chair and set a spell. And welcome back to glorious downtown Boogertown. I'm Buford, and I'm the only hillbilly here today. We're actually not in Boogertown. I'm up in Berlin, Ohio. Now, it's spelled like Berlin, Germany, but they pronounce it Berlin. But I'm in Amish country, where I'm going to be for the next 4 weeks performing at the Amish Country Theater in Berlin, Ohio. It's a really cool place. Check it out. Love to have you come see me. If you do, be sure and come up after the show and tell me you follow the holler. But I have a special guest here. The show's for the Amish Country Theater, their regular shows go on Tuesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. On Wednesdays, they very often have special shows, and we're recording this on Wednesday, and they had a special show tonight with Robert G. Lee. How you doing, Robert?
I'm doing very well. Finished the show, had a fun time, and it was just great to come out here. I will not be able to spend a lot of time in Amish country, which makes me sad. I really, because their buffets are to die for.
Oh,
but
right up the road, I think the town's called Winesburg. There's a place called Mrs. Yoder's, and they've got pecan pie that my wife and I almost stabbed each other over. Oh, unbelievable.
Well, last time I was in Pennsylvania, we went to one, and it was all you can eat buffet. So you're just like, ooh, they have fried shrimp. Ooh, there's more fried shrimp. And by the time you do the show, you're sick. So I couldn't have it before I came in.
People ask me when I was coming up here, I'm doing a 5-week residency up here and till July 15th. And people ask me, they go, you perform for the Amish? And I go, well, there's some Amish people in the audience, but it's people who come to the Amish area to see what the Amish, you know, how the Amish life is. It's a really nice little tourist area. But I actually have performed for Amish audiences, like completely Amish audiences, which is a lot of fun. And they actually like me because, first off, I'm a clean comedian. And secondly, I speak German. And so
slam dunk.
I do some jokes in German just for them, and they love it. So so when people say, you really go perform for the Amish? Absolutely. Yeah. I look Amish, if not for the mustache. Now, Robert, you are a stand-up comedian, and you've been doing that for a long time.
It's been 35 years. Yeah.
35 years. And you, for a long time, were the number one warm-up guy on sitcoms. Is that right?
Yeah. And most people don't know what that is. They think, oh, you just get them going. No, with a sitcom, it takes 3 to 5 hours or more to film a show. So the warm-up is the guy that gets them going, keeps them going when they go change their costumes, or the writers have to rewrite something that they didn't laugh, the audience didn't like, and they just keep going. And at the end of the show, the laughs have to be at the exact same level they were as at the beginning. And that's my job, to keep them going. So you learn how to ad lib, you learn how to have fun, but it also kept me in town being Los Angeles. But yeah, I started off on Golden Girls, Designing Women, moved over to all the Miller Boyette shows, the Friday Night ABC stuff. So that was Family Matters and Step by Step, and then did, the last episode of Cheers, did the pilots for Frasier and Everybody Loves Raymond, did Wings, Everybody Loves Christine, Drew Carey Show, and then ended up with the Norman Lear Show, One Day at a Time, when he rebooted that. So worked with Norman back in the 90s, and so when he did this, he brought me back on. So it was a great gig, but with COVID, it went away because they couldn't have audiences, and they couldn't even have anything more than a skeleton crew of anything. So they couldn't have extras. They just shot actors in front of a wall for some sitcoms. It's changed. So now back on the road. So yeah. I'm doing what you're doing, but not 5 weeks in one place.
But that's unusual. But the guy that I'm replacing in the show here is an old friend of mine, Ken Groves, and you know Ken as well. Right. Ken and I've been friends for over 30 years. And so when he needed to take some time off this summer, they asked me, hey, you want to come up? And I said, absolutely. I love this place. I love the theater's gorgeous. The crowds are very nice. And the area is a lovely place to just sit and relax. So, you know, and we've got this travel show that we do on our YouTube channel, the Hillbillies in the Holler, called Straight Out of Boogertown. And so while I'm here, I'm off on Sundays and Mondays. So I'm going to drive up to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and do an episode in Cleveland.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going to go to Pittsburgh and do an episode. I'm going to go to Buffalo and do an episode. So I'm going to be able to, over the 5 weeks, knock out 5 or 6 episodes here in the Midwest of places that I, you know, wouldn't have gone to either, under other circumstances.
Well, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is going to be great. I'm sorry, that just towered over everything else you mentioned. That's great. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, the one place I really love to go, if you haven't been, you should, is in Jamestown, New York, the National Comedy Center. And I'm hoping to go do an episode there. It's like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for comedy.
Wow. No, I haven't heard of that.
It's amazing. The first thing, you walk in the door, you buy your ticket, they give you a wristband with a microchip on it, and you walk up to this kiosk and scan it, and then it asks you who your favorite comedians are, what your favorite comedy movies are, what your favorite comedy TV shows are. It quizzes you all about your taste, and as you go through the museum, you scan your wristband, and it customizes the experience to you.
Wow.
And your tastes.
Wow.
And the whole upstairs area is, you know, very clean.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the Blue Room.
Okay, all right.
Where over 21 people can go.
Red Fox.
To learn about Red Fox and Richard Pryor and Lenny Bruce and George Carlin. So
Rusty Warren, all those. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
The party albums.
Yeah, but it's in the middle of nowhere, but it was Lucille Ball's hometown. And she had
Okay, I have heard about this. Okay.
Yeah, they also have a Lucy and Desi museum where they have the original sets set back up from the Hollywood apartment and the New York apartment. Just amazing.
Well, but Desi Arnaz was the guy who invented the sitcom, and he was the first warm up. He would go out and warm the crowd up.
And they said that when he hosted Saturday Night Live, they said he was sitting there going, "Do you know I invented that?
Yeah,
I invented that too." And he was right. He did.
He was telling
the truth. Yeah.
Yep.
It's amazing. But when you first go in the Comedy Center, there's a little theater you can go in and watch a hologram of Jim Gaffigan. And he says, "Welcome to Jamestown. I can only assume you're lost."
But he's great.
Yeah. So that's, it's fun being able to do this and get out and do some other stuff while I'm up here. But I just watched your show and I was absolutely blown away. You've been on Dry Bar Comedy, which
that's
is
right.
a goal of mine. And a lot of great comedians on there. Love that show. If you guys are listening and are not familiar, Dry Bar Comedy is a clean comedy show, and it's filmed out in Provo, Utah.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So make sure, So go watch my special because I'm like five people away from going into profit, which means that I can do my next special for them. So I've all the material I did tonight. That's what I want to go out and
there you go. So if everyone listening to the show goes and listens to his thing five times, we'll.
That's all I need.
That's all we need. That's awesome, man. Well, actually, I know one person who's watching it right now is Boo Boo from the Hillbillies and the Holler, because I called him during intermission and I said, "You got to look this guy up on Dry Bar. He's great." So,
thank you.
Loved it. They did a beautiful bit about if the Wizard of Oz was done today. You guys got to watch it when it comes out on the new Dry Bar special, but it's a brilliant bit. It's one of those things where, as a comedian, you're sitting out there going, "Oh, I wish I'd written that."
Good. Jealousy from another comic. That's what we live for.
That's what we live for. I know that. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it was great, though. But you said this has been a several week run. You've been moving around the country?
Yeah, it's been nice. Back in Indianapolis, that's my hometown. Had there's a theater, New Comedy and Magic Club there. So did that. Then up in Wisconsin in Green Bay, there's a place called Cup of Joy. So really nice crowds up there. That was my second time going there. And then, and this is also family. So my mom's in Indianapolis, so I had to do a lot of paperwork for her. And then my daughter's in Detroit, and she's going through some tough times, so visited her. So, you know, little profession, little personal. It was a nice trip.
That's good. And now you're headed home tomorrow.
Yep.
Well, go back and see mom, you said.
Yeah, I'll drive back to Indianapolis and then get a flight back to Los Angeles. It was my wife's birthday today, so I sent flowers, but that probably wasn't quite enough. So I have to make sure I do a little makeup session on Friday.
That was great. Well, you and you were telling in your show, you've been married 41 years.
That's right. That's right.
That is it's an epic achievement, I'll tell you. And especially in this day and time, and especially in the entertainment business.
Yes. Well, in L.A., it's 150 years in L.A. So
yeah, right. It's like dog years. Yeah,
exactly.
L.A. marriage years. Paul Newman was married for 5,000 years in Hollywood years. Yeah, that's great. We're going to talk a little bit more about your career and things you've done. But before we do, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, BigfootSearchGear.com.
Do you walk through the forest with an eye open for the unknown? Do you believe that Bigfoot is out there, somewhere? He may be hiding, but you don't have to. Let the world know you believe. Visit BigfootSearchGear.com for the largest collection of apparel and gifts for Bigfoot enthusiasts. Bigfoot t-shirts, hats, stickers, signs, and keychains, as well as Sasquatch hot sauce. It'll make you howl like a Yeti. Go to BigfootSearchGear.com and enter promo code Hillbillies at checkout for 10% off. Free shipping to anywhere in the U.S. on orders over $25. BigfootSearchGear.com.
And we're back. All right, so here's something I found out tonight when they were introducing you that I was really blown away by, was that you wrote for VeggieTales.
Yes, I did. And it was that whenever they would do movies, their main guys would go off and they had to keep the pipeline going with the individual story. So they brought me in, and the story of how I got my first show was on page one, I had a Western, and on page seven, out of all the ideas I pitched them, I had a story about Joseph. And when I was done with the pitch meeting, they said, "We like that story about Joseph as a Western." And I said, "Yeah, that's my favorite idea too." So they just combined the first and the last, and somehow I got the show. So then I did a story of Gideon. I did a Sherlock Holmes story. I did a Christmas episode. Man of La Mancha.
I've seen the Gideon one. That was really good. My kids used to watch that.
Good. So that it was just a really fun run. But then things happen and they went bankrupt about 20, 30 times. So then they bring us back and then the next iteration. And eventually you just don't know any. It's all built on relationships. And when everybody you know has been fired, it's like no one's going to bring you back. So,
right.
But it's fun now that there are 20-year-old kids who grew up with it. And I'm on their podcast. I go, "Oh, I can't believe you. Well, what happened on this episode? And what happened on that episode?" It's like, I feel like it's... that Paul McCartney sketch from Saturday Night Live where
Chris Farley.
Chris Farley.
Yeah, that was cool.
What was that like? Yeah, that was cool.
That was that was awesome. Yeah.
That's what it is. These kids are so excited. It's just VeggieTales, but it's fun.
I love it. Well, you told a funny story on stage about a joke that you wrote that couldn't be in the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to tell that one or if you've got other ones that... jokes that you wrote that they said no to.
They're so particular on what they're afraid that children will imitate things. And sure. It makes sense. It's like, all right, fine. And the Santa Claus episode we had about Christmas, we had to, how do we not give away the secret? Not that anything's wrong with that. But how do we, but the my favorite joke that got cut, this is just one of my, and I will tell this one. It's like, I did a story on Sherlock Holmes, and it was called Sherlock Holmes. And if you read Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's version of it, Sherlock Holmes, he, of course, was the great detective, and he played the violin, and he snorted cocaine. That was something that was legal back in 1900. So that's why he wrote that into the stories. Well, I figured, okay, let's update it, and the kids won't know what it is about, but a couple adults might be savvy, and they might laugh at it. So I had Larry Boy with a bottle of Coke, obviously Coca-Cola, with a straw in it going up his nose, and he's snorting it, and bubbles are coming out of his ears. And after a while, he goes, "I don't get this at all." And they just wouldn't take that for some reason. I don't know what the problem was, but they wouldn't take my drug reference.
Well, I've always had a rule, because, as a comedian, you've got to push the boundaries. And I'm a clean comedian, but I want people to laugh at stuff. And sometimes, like your whole bit about your elbow, you have to talk about things that are delicate, but you have to do it in a delicate way.
Yes.
And so I had a joke. I have a puppet that I used to use a live dog that I made talk, but he passed away. And so now I have a puppet I do the same routine with, but he does impressions of other dogs.
Oh, fun.
So I see like a French poodle and he says, "Wee wee." And I say, "French poodles don't go wee wee." He says, "Sure they do on mailboxes." Yeah. And, and then later I wrote this joke one night and had everybody in the green room at the theater where I was just cackling laughing, but I couldn't do it because it wasn't dirty, but it would cause an uncomfortable conversation on the way home because I was performing for family audiences. So I had to rewrite the joke where it wouldn't cause that. So that's my rule of thumb. Will it cause an uncomfortable conversation? So the joke was, I said, "How about a Springer Spaniel?" And he goes, "Those puppies ain't mine." And I said, "What?" He goes, "Oh, that's a Jerry Springer Spaniel." Well, I said, okay, that's going to cause an uncomfortable conversation. So I changed it to, you don't treat me right. What? That's a Jerry Springer Spaniel. Because then I figure if the kid says, Mommy, I didn't get the joke about the Springer Spaniel. You say, well, it's a TV show where people go on and argue about their relationships.
Yeah, and they hit each other with chairs. And
That's a not uncomfortable conversation. But the them puppies ain't mine. I pushed the line. So I backed it off.
But that's a great rule of thumb. And another comedian has one where, you know, if you cause the audience to picture something in their mind that they don't want to have there, it's like, you probably crossed the line. So that's why, although I talk about my elbow, which is obviously nobody in the audience knows what we're talking about, but I had a delicate procedure on manly parts. And I just say, to keep everybody comfortable, let's just say it was my elbow. So I euphemize it. Yeah. And I've had little old ladies come up after the show. Oh, I want that elbow routine. That happened to my husband. I want that. And they go, okay, well, you know, I'll be recording that in October. But yeah, if you can find a way to just do a clever twist that everybody who gets it, and the innocent ones in the audience, it goes over their head, and everybody's happy.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, you were talking about the influence, and I loved your impressions of all the different Looney Tunes characters. But that's what Looney Tunes did. As we were growing up, they pushed the envelope.
Yep.
There were so many jokes. You go back and watch them now as an old man, and you're like, oh my gosh. You know, because the adults were laughing and the kids were clueless, but still laughing.
Yep.
We still loved them. But I do a lot of Looney Tunes characters in my act for time. When you did Marvin the Martian, which I love. He's my favorite. Oh no, the Earth creature has stolen the Illudium P-38 space modulator.
It's just the way he walks.
Delays. But I do a thing in my act about the song Old Red by Blake Shelton. And I say, you know, that's a song about a hunting dog. I'd like to hear Elmer Fudd do it. Come on, somebody, why don't you want old Wedge Engine to have a little fun? Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting convicts.
You can't go wrong with Elmer Fudd. Oh, it always works.
I'm telling you. But the mastery of how you did all those impressions and just rolled everything one to another and told a cohesive story that the crowd was hanging on the edge of their seats listening to. I was blown away. Really, really good.
Thank you very much.
You guys got to check this guy out. So what was your favorite experience working in sitcoms?
Oh boy. I mean, I had my favorite show out of all the shows I did. I would make a toss up between Perfect Strangers and Wings. And the reason being, when you get a show that has fans, and Perfect Strangers had an audience of 400 people, and those were fans. It was a silly little show between Balky and Larry and, you know, the cousin from Meepos, and it was just nutty. But it was that classic Lucy, Laverne and Shirley kind of comedy that was still going on, and the audience just went nuts, and it was so much fun. But Wings was a different experience. And that it was, those are the people that created Frasier. So it was very smart, very fun. But again, they had a fan base. It was one of those also ran, never quite number one, but the audience loved it so much. So rabid fans, that's always.
It wasn't a huge hit, but it had people that were just dedicated.
Yeah. So if you have a dedicated fan base, you can just, like we were talking about, when you get that audience where you're surfing the laughs and it's like, you're just riding that wave. It's like, yeah, this is great. So, and the producers were great. The actors were great. Everybody was, I mean, I've had just really jerky actors and really great actors. And I tell everybody, as far as you said, what's the favorite show? My favorite pilot was Frasier and Everybody Loves Raymond. Those two were just genius out of the gate, and they were so good. But man, I've seen a lot of pilots where it just didn't quite work. And I've been in a lot of shows, and I tell everybody that the rule in Hollywood is you become what you always were. So if you're just a struggling actor, you can hide the fact that you're a major jerk until you get the first, second, or third season under your belt, and you begin to believe your own press. And when you do, you become who you always were.
People like Jackie Gleason is notorious for that.
Really?
Yeah, Jackie Gleason was supposed to have really just, I mean, he showed the worst side of himself after he got really successful.
And it's very sad.
Yeah.
But my two best examples, and so everybody out there can know, Ted Danson and Julie Louis-Dreyfus are some of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. And they work all the time. Why? Because they're the nicest people you could ever want to meet. And people want to work with them. And these jerky actors who think, oh, I've got to have this dressing room and the lights have to be turned off and the TVs have to be turned around. No one can wear white. You can't say this. They're out there. And every year I'd come back to another show and they'd more rules about what you can't do and what you can't say. And it's because these actors get so paranoid and they're, you have to walk on eggshells around them. But the great people, it's like, they just enjoy the work. They're happy they have the work and they're just fun. I mean, Julie would come up and hug me every single episode. Ted would play with me and I would do a thing where I thought he was a jerk and he'd go over and have me fired. And it was a big, and he just wanted to play. He was just a great guy. So there's some really fun stories.
That's awesome. Well, I tell you what, I absolutely am thrilled to hear that because I love both of those people. Yeah. And it's good to hear that they are as genuine as they really seem. I don't know a lot of people in Hollywood, but I've known a lot of people in the country music business over the years. But I do know one person that you may know who I think is another genuinely good human being is Jay Johnson from Soap. Back in the day.
I remember that was, I love Jade. Soap is one of my favorite all time.
Yeah. Well, being a ventriloquist, yeah, we're a very small community.
Of course. Yeah.
And so we all know each other. And Jay is just a genuinely good guy. And I'll tell you, one of my prized possessions is I have a shooting script of his from Soap with his notes in the margin and everything. It was great. It was at the ventriloquist convention a few years ago. He was selling them to benefit the museum.
Okay.
And giving all the money to the museum. And I was like, oh, I'm getting one of those.
Oh, that's good.
It's actually the one with the grapefruit, which is one of my favorite scenes of that whole thing, where they took Bob away from him and he couldn't. And so he cut a grapefruit in the mouth and made it talk.
Had to have it talk. Oh, God.
Squeezing and their juice everywhere. It was brilliant.
See, and that was written by Susan Harris, who went on to create Golden Girls.
Oh, okay.
And so to me, Soap was just genius all the way through. Okay. Billy Crystal got his start there. There was Catherine Helmut. There were so many people that were so good. It was that ensemble to die for. It was great.
And you know, I was watching it as a kid,
yeah,
and really shouldn't have been, but I loved it because of Jay and Bob.
Yeah.
And of course, now he's gone on to glory and won a Tony a few years ago for his live show, the Two and Only, that he did.
Oh, I didn't know. That's great.
Oh, yeah. It's a fantastic. You can find video of it online, I think, or you can stream it some places. But yeah, it's called the Two and Only. It's a fantastic show. Well, let's take another quick break for a word from our sponsor, coffeeandsugar.com. And today's episode is brought to you by coffeeandsugar.com. That's KAWFEEANDSUGAR, coffeeandsugar.com. Home of Granny's Hillbilly Coffee, some of the best coffee you'll ever drink. If you use promo code HOLLER at checkout, you'll save 15% off orders of $29 or more. Visit coffeeandsugar.com and tell them the Hillbillies in the Holler sent you. And we're back with Robert G. Lee. Now, when I met you, I said I was expected with that name to see a redneck comedian like myself. But you actually are descended from that Lee family, aren't you?
I am. Directly descended from the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. There's two of them. And Robert E. Lee is their nephew. So,
right.
You know, kind of a distant cousin who went the wrong way. Or for some people, went the right way.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, well, it was funny because I said that and you pointed at your nose and you go, I got the same nose.
Oh, I'm telling you, if you look at any picture of Robert E. Lee and my picture, it's like, yep, they're related.
Yep,
there's no doubt.
That's
no
the
doubt.
Same nose. Well, I was really interested in the story you were telling about, you know, how you got into all this. And I mean, first of all, the thing that really got me was the story you told about your third grade teacher.
And that is absolutely true. And so every once in a while, you know, as you dive in the audience and you talk to people, and I wasn't planning on telling that story, but it's just one of those things that affected my life. So for everybody in the audience, everybody should know that the biggest fear people have, and Seinfeld does a routine on this, the biggest fear people have is speaking in public. And so Seinfeld said, so at a funeral, the person who is speaking would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. And it's absolutely true. People are scared to death of it. Well, my third grade teacher was very proactive, and she made every single student get up every single week. And it was a rotation of 1 week we had to memorize a poem. I'm from Indiana. I did James Wickham Riley, and he did Down Home.
Little Orphan Annie.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I just loved him. And the teacher said, maybe you could try a different poem. Why? I like James Hook of Riley. It's I'm from Indiana. He's an Indiana poet. I'm going to do that. The next week it was a news report. The next week it was a book report. And so we did these things, and it made you comfortable getting up in front of a crowd. And that's when I started getting some comedy chops, learning I can make this audience laugh by doing this poem. I can do these accents. I can do it like this. And what we discovered, I've still got some of my closest friends from that class, but there is a federal judge, a heart cardiologist, a lawyer, a Broadway producer, a comedian. I'm missing one. Oh, and an interpersonal professor. Communication professor. So all of us work in front of audiences. The judge, the cardiologist, they're all teachers, or they're comedians, or they're performers. And all of us came from Mrs. Tramontini's class, and nobody has a fear of speaking in public. So I don't think that's a coincidence. I think it's definitely because of the influence of a teacher and how she shaped our lives. And we all, every single one, gives her credit. We all love her.
That's amazing. I can't wait to tell our daughters about that. We have two daughters that are teachers, and
and that was third grade. That's not too early to start them.
Oh no, yeah, one of them is a second grade teacher. Yeah, but yeah, that it really is the impact that a teacher can have on a kid's life. I had one that impacted mine greatly. My love for knowledge and the why I am always reading and always looking for interesting historical tidbits and things, whatever, is because of my history teacher in high school. He changed my life. And recently I met a man and we got to talking and found out he'd gone to the same high school I had a few years before. And I said, "You remember Mr. Jones?" And he said, "Man, changed my life."
Isn't that amazing? So one teacher, yeah. Two different people. And that means he did it for dozens and dozens.
Yeah.
And I told the story tonight of you just get different teachers. My sixth grade teacher, third grade was great. Fourth grade was great. Fifth grade, I became a comedian, and I'll tell the story when I was in fifth grade. And that's when I realized that my brain didn't work like other people's brains. That's when it became clear to me. I knew I could get laughs in third grade. And then when I was in fifth grade, I'll tell you in a bit, but sixth grade, boom, she was a Nazi. I would do cartoons on my notebook. She would rip them off, throw them in the trash, and tell me I'd never make a living as a smart aleck. And so I tell everybody, I call her up every year when I come home, and I laugh and I hang up and tell her how much I make. And she's in a nursing home. She has no idea who I am, but it just feels good to do it.
But I had a teacher say that to me. I figured out in the third grade that I could burp on command. And that when you're in third grade, that's hilarious. And I had a teacher say, "You think you're ever going to be able to make a living doing that?" And I have a puppet that burps in the act, and it's a real burp. And it's because I know how to make myself burp. And so, yep.
I do.
As you're a matter right. of fact, I did figure out how to make a living at it. Paid for my house.
Oh, my gosh. This is... So my fifth grade class, they showed us a movie, and it was a movie about a hunter, and he's got a dog, and he's going to go out and he's going to shoot a deer. Well, it so happens that the deer then has this little fawn come out, and it's like, oh, how sweet. You know, there's a child involved. And so the hunter has an attack of conscience, and he doesn't shoot the deer. And we're supposed to write an essay about it. Well, the whole class writes a serious essay, and I wrote a comedy routine. And it wasn't the fact that I made them laugh. I mean, my teacher was crying by the time I was done. I used George of the Jungle, which was a cartoon of that day. And it was just a great bit. But when I was done with the class, I walked out and I said, nobody else did a comedy routine. I don't think like other people think. And that was a big revelation. I didn't realize that until that point. And that's when I started going down that road of saying, wait a minute. Maybe I'm not supposed to do the math or the doctor or the lawyer. Maybe I'm supposed to go over here. And I'm from Indiana. There are a couple of famous comedians from Indiana. But you start looking at it and go,
Red Skelton?
Dick Van Dyke. There's a lot of people like, how can I do what they're doing? So I started going down that road, and all because of that fifth grade class.
That's amazing. Yeah, I had a similar eureka moment. Mine was at 4 years old. And it wasn't something funny I did. It was something my great uncle did. I had this great uncle who was born on Leap Day, and he let that fact inform his entire life. So right before he died, they had put a thing in the paper, local great-grandfather turns 21.
Yes,
Chris. He was a total cut-up. He was always pulling practical jokes. And but he, when they took me to meet him, his name was Thomas Jefferson. That was his first two names, Uncle TJ. And they took me to meet him. He was my grandfather's brother. And he said, "How you doing, son?" And I said, "I'm doing good." And he said, "I've not been feeling well today." And he threw a piece of rubber vomit on the floor. Now, I was a kid with a really bad gag reflex. I was like, and he said, no. And he picked it up and wiggled it. And I was like, "You can make people laugh on purpose."
On purpose. There you go. On purpose.
And that was it. And the die was cast.
Yep, yep.
And I started out, I wanted a ventriloquist dummy for Christmas. I wanted the magic tricks. I was anything I could do to get in front of a group. I did not have that fear. I was on fire and got in a lot of trouble in school. Got a lot of paddlings because I was always on.
Now, did you listen to the ventriloquist record? There was a record that all these guys.
Yeah.
I've got a, what was the name?
It was the Danny O'Day and Farfel, Jimmy Nelson's.
Yeah, there you go. That's what yeah. I was. I've heard so many people about our age go that they listen to this album and it trained you to be a ventriloquist.
But for me, it was actually, I memorized all of Bill Cosby's records. I memorized all of all these different comedians. I knew all their routines backwards and forwards. Yeah. And I would do them for my friends. And that taught me, as a kid, that taught me timing.
Yep.
That taught me yeah. those rhythms and how to do it. And so then, as I got older, I started writing my own stuff. And the next thing you know, I'm working in nightclubs. But my father made me go to college. He said, you have to go to college because you have to have something to fall back on. So I got a degree in medieval literature.
There you go.
Fall back on that.
There's a
that
Renaissance.
Was a five-year joke. That was a five-year joke.
We've got a Renaissance fair in August for 2 weeks. And that's all you got.
But anyway, it has actually served me well because I got a degree in literature. And so I learned a lot about writing. And that's essentially what we do. We just perform it after we write it. So, well, Robert, I really appreciate you spending some time with us here on the show. And folks, be sure to check out Dry Bar Comedy and see what he's done on there already. And by viewing it, we're going to push him into getting that next special on there. And we appreciate you guys listening. And let me make sure this thing's still recording. Oh, it's still okay. Okay, good. We appreciate you guys listening. I'm going to be at the Amish Country Theater here in Berlin, Ohio for the next 4 weeks as this comes out. And would love to see you. So come and say hi and tell me you follow the holler. And be sure and follow the holler. Please go and check out the YouTube channel. Hit the subscribe button and the notification bell so you'll know when we put out new videos. We're putting out shorts every day and longer form videos straight out of Boogertown, usually once a week. And be sure and keep listening. And hey, Gator, if you're listening, Howie Mandel is still doing fine. In the meantime, I'm Buford. Y'all be good to each other.
You've been listening to the Hillbillies and the Holler podcast. Come back next week for a whole lot more fun right here in downtown Boogertown.